stitches, I mean, all things considered, if you're going to crash and have to go to the ER, stitches are, I think, much better than broken bones. But, you know, hopefully he's able to heal up quick and maybe get some anti-inflammatories or maybe a couple beers. As many as his, he had a thing, I don't know if you saw it, but he said he was going to, it was like one beer for every 1,000 feet he climbed or something this year. So.
Damn.
So you might have to break that rule. You know, I don't think anyone would mind, or they wouldn't hold it against him. But I hope he heals up quick.
I imagine he climbs a lot. Is he an alcoholic? Is that weird? No. Yeah. That could be a lot of beer. Hello, cycling fans, and welcome to episode 31 of Between Two Wheels podcast, cycling news, commentary, analysis, and interviews from Northern California. This episode is brought to you by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people with special life insurance rates. Go to healthiq.com/BTW to support the show and learn more. As always, please subscribe and share the show via iTunes, Stitcher, Podbeam, or whatever podcast service you use. And for this week, we videoed the conversation, and it will be up on YouTube as well. The broadcast can be found on our Facebook page by searching Between Two Wheels, and the links will also be in the show notes found in the description of this feed. Before we get to our guests, take a listen to DDA coach Nate Dunn's tip on eating carbs during your ride. Enjoy!
Hi, this is Nate Dunn from Data Driven Athlete with a quick coaching tip. So if you're interested in the best evidence-based nutritional strategy to improve your performance on the bike, the best thing you could do is to make sure that you're consuming adequate carbohydrate during your rides. Now, adequate carbohydrate really depends on the intensity and the duration of your ride, on the shorter side to about 30 grams of carbohydrate per hour of riding, to on the higher side about 90 grams of carbohydrate per hour. So if you want to dig into this with a lot more depth, you can head over to our website at datadrivenathlete.com and check out an article titled, Are You Fueling Enough on the Bike? And this gives very concrete guidelines to make sure that you're meeting the demands of your ride with adequate carbohydrate from shorter rides to multi-hour rides or races. Thanks.
This is once again Tyler Yonke coming to you from an undisclosed location. We've got Chris Flower once again joining us. Chris, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Did you have a good weekend?
I did. It was a nice 3-day weekend.
Good. Good. Now, this week we have something pretty special. We're going to be doing kind of a little series of talking to different people in Northern California and their teams, and getting kind of a breakdown of what their team roster is, their sponsors. And this week, debut, we have Jason Grafrath of the Thirsty Bear team. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
I hope the drinks are okay for you today.
Yeah, the drinks are welcoming.
Good to hear. So give us, first of all, what exactly is your team name? Because I know every year team names kind of change. There's presented by, distributed by, powered by, all these things. So what is your official name?
Yeah, we are Thirsty Bear Cycling. So we had, Akamai was a longtime sponsor, really good sponsor. And they decided not to sponsor the team this year. So we're still Thirsty Bear, which is organic brewery downtown San Francisco. We've got Rambus as another sponsor, and Cognience as another sponsor.
So those
have all been kind of long running sponsors for us.
And that's mostly based out of like the Bay Area, is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I think almost exclusively all our sponsors, you know, with the exception of obviously Caselli and some of the equipment sponsors, are all out of the Bay Area.
And how did you get in? How long have you been with the team?
So this will be year number 4 on Thirsty Bear. It was with a number of other teams. I think it's kind of like, I don't know, I think a lot of people in the area have started on Team City. That's where I got my start. So Team City was the first team, then on to Davis Bike Club. Then I was with Taleo for a couple years. Then Lang Twins, we were a powerhouse for a little while. And then it was a really small team, and then I was on Thirsty Bear.
Have you been kind of moving around with the same guys to the different teams, or was this a different outcropping for you of joining these guys?
Thirsty Bear was really, it was a group of people that I always wanted to join. As far as everyone knows who Chris Phipps is. I mean, he has a good reputation in the Northern California and nationally. But I wanted a group of racers who were really smart racers, who like to race bikes, and who are people that I would like to hang out with after the races.
Yeah, those are always important things, right?
They're usually mutually exclusive, right? Yeah. So you can find a group of people that are just fun and, you know, it's good times. And then at the end of the race, you look around and you might be the only one there. or you can find like super duper serious racers. And then afterwards, it's just like, it's a lot of grumbling and chest pounding and stuff like that. So.
And nothing brings that out more than doing like a Chico stage race or Cascade Classic or Nationals where you're hanging out with them a little bit longer. And then you're like, maybe, why am I by myself all the time? Well, maybe you're the guy, right?
Yep. So some of the best times I've had on the team are at races like Chico and Nationals and Cascade, and because you do some hanging out, right? I mean, you're not racing your bike the whole time, and you want to have a group of people you want to hang out with. So
yeah, especially at our age, we're getting up there, and you know, you don't want to go out and hang out with. Maybe you do want to go do the partying with the guys at night, or maybe you have family, so you don't want to. So you need that kind of that mix. So you guys are predominantly, I take it, still a masters team. Is that correct?
Yeah. We. I don't know if it's always been. I'm pretty sure it has always been just masters, but masters men and women. So we've had this year. I think we'll have a pretty strong women's masters team. And then, we're aging up now. I think this year we tried to look for some youth. All our 35 guys are aging up. I aged up this year to the 45. So it's getting much smaller in the 35s.
You know, we'll get into some stuff, but it brings back to when Chris and I went and did our district crit championships at the end of the year. And I note, right?
Yeah.
And you won, right? No, you didn't win.
I won something. I won eighth place. Does that count?
I think in your head, you were a winner.
Yeah.
I think you're a winner.
Based on the field size, I think everybody won.
Well, and that was my point was I noticed like I did the, what is it, 40, was that, damn, was that in the 45?
Yes.
Up above, okay. I noticed that was the big group and we had a big field. And those are kind of the guys, you look back, it's always just that field size keeps aging up, but it's that big group that keeps going. And I don't know that we're getting a backfill, you know, the 35s. Which should be, I would always think, hey, these are the guys that are just most recently from the P12s, all those. That should be the bigger field, and it was small.
Yeah, it was. I don't know if it was a victim of the time of day. We were Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock or something like that, and there were maybe 15 of us in the field, give or take.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was a time issue, as well as maybe guys just weren't that interested in it. There was another race, I think, coming up the next week. But yeah, it was a small field, 15, give or take.
Yeah. I mean, have you noticed that? Or is that just kind of, you think?
Yeah. I think I refer to it as the Lance bubble. I think there was this really big interest in cycling. And I think a lot of people like me came from mountain biking and decided to try out road racing. And some of us decided it was a lot of fun and decided to stick around. But now you don't, it doesn't seem like you have that steady influx of 35 racers. It's just this big bubble of people that's now 45. And then we, like on our team, we have a pretty strong 55 team. And I'm not sure I would be able to say that any team was a strong 55 team like 5 years ago, right? It kind of didn't exist, right?
Yeah, those are the guys that they'll win championships just by showing up, right? Because there's like nobody in their field.
Way but back
not
when.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Now that's the 70-plus group, I think.
Right.
Well, okay, let's...
75-plus tandem.
Yeah, or the guy that just retired at 103 or whatever.
He was 106, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
There's some up there.
That one
so
you just...
mentioned mountain biking as your kind of intro. So what kind of spurred your jump into the roadside of cycling?
Yeah, I was a hater for a little while, I'll admit it. So I got into mountain biking in college. And my friends were doing it, and it was a good combination for me of cross country that I did in high school, and then skiing. You know, it had the ground rush for skiing, so you could work really hard, but then when you're at the top of the hill, there's this payoff. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I did that for a long time, and then got a road bike because we were going to have our first kid, and I wanted to get some bike time that I probably wasn't going to get when I'm busy being dad. And I did kind of both for a little while, and then I had some friends that were racing. So I think that's a common theme. I think we all get into this stuff because we know somebody. You're like, oh, I knew this person at a bike shop, or oh, I had a friend, right? So it wasn't any different for me. So Got into road racing, and I had a very glorious probably first 3 miles of Sea Otter after the flag dropped, and that was
it was
a pretty typical Cat 5 maneuver, but yeah, and it just kept I really enjoyed the training aspect. It brought me back to my my running days as far as having a training plan and seeing a progression, and then the tactical side of road racing was really interesting. Like in mountain biking, it's just Gurr who has who can just mash, or it's a lot more strength, and in road racing there's a lot more tactical. It's like almost 50-50. You'll see the guys that or the ladies that win, they're both strong and smart.
I had a little insight this weekend. I was watching CrossNets, and what you just said reminded you ever talk to someone who, hey, I race bikes, or they're watching something, and they're like, why doesn't that guy just like take off? It's the first few miles of a 100-mile road race. Go, just go. And you're like, no, you don't get the drafting and all that. But watching the cross race, Jeremy Powers is, I think it's more like that, right? It's more like mountain biking where you go to the front and you just drill people off your wheel and you just keep going. So how long did you race mountain bikes, or did you race mountain bikes?
I was kind of against racing when I was mountain biking. To me, that's not what mountain bikes were about. To me, mountain bikes were a great way to just get lost in the wilderness, and to just go ride some really fun trail. I did do the Prairie City races for like 2 years. That's a really good, for anyone that's interested in like a kind of sort of serious bike racing.
Yeah,
it's a really good event. They do a great job, and I think it's grown a lot over the last several years. So.
Now, you had mentioned the women's masters. Did you guys have how long has that been developing for your team?
As long as I've been there, it's a little bit overshadowed by the men's. It's kind of typical of participation rates amongst fields. I want to say we have maybe like 10, maybe 15 ladies racing for us next year.
Okay. Did they go out to nationals as well, or is that pretty much staying here?
We had ladies racing nationals. I know when I went, did it in Utah. I'm not sure if anyone went, across the US to do it last year and this year. I don't know. I'm not tied in well enough to know what their season goals are.
Do you guys separate those out pretty well, or is it a mixed group? I guess it sounds like to me that it's pretty much the men are doing their thing and the women are doing their thing. Is it kind of operated by this? Is it a club? How is that?
Yeah, it's under the same umbrella. And obviously, they have men's and women's fields at all the races. So we're there at different times racing in different races. But yeah, it's a team. On the team rides that we have, it's usually... It's co-ed, so it's all comers.
Are they
it's not really segregated.
Gotcha. Do you have like a team camp or anything like that that you guys have coordinated and gone out to, or have you done it yet?
It always rains for team camp.
Of course.
For us, honestly, like without fail, it's the worst rains of the season, and it's always a good time. But it's always the weekend of the bump and Cherry Pie.
Okay, so it's so upcoming,
like the second week of February.
And where are you guys doing that at?
Or is
that
we're going to be in the Bay Area this year. We've gone to different places, kind of remote, but this year we're going to kind of keep it local for everyone.
You're going to do like, is it multi-day? Is it just a ride for the team, or you guys do like a weekend camp type of thing?
It is a weekend. It's pretty informal, and generally with the team, one of the things that I like is. You have a lot of very respectable, strong, smart racers that take this stuff very seriously, but the details are not, nobody sweats the details.
Yeah. They're not making you wear the polo shirt at the dinner. Right? Yeah.
We have team camp. It'll be 3 days. I don't know where we're going to be riding. It'll get figured out before people get there. You can show up for some of team camp. You can show up for all of team camp. It's relatively casual. in that regard.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Do you have your roster? Do you want to go through kind of, or maybe you know off of hand, kind of who you added from last year? You said you added some young guys, and kind of give us a breakdown of who is writing for you guys.
Yeah, so for next year, just as far as a preview goes, it'll be the same team for all intents and purposes. We have a, like I said, we have that bubble in our team in the 45s, and it means it's really difficult to add people in that space because you already have a lot of people that are really strong and smart and already a part of the team. So we did have a conscious effort to add. We added Joe Chacon, who's from Elyeel Cycling. He's lives in Clovis, so he'll be doing races up here and then maybe even some SoCal races. He's just a strong dude. He's the kind of guy that would have a very good finish at like Snelling, where you need a sprint, but it's long.
Mm-hmm.
He was up in the group at San Rafael this year. We were way in the break, and it was just I don't know if you were you at that race.
No, San Rafael this year.
I do remember him at Snelling though. He had a really good finish. Yeah. I saw him sprint up to third.
Yeah,
it was impressive.
Is he a 35?
Almost, yeah, almost as impressive as Chris Flower.
It's close.
Interesting.
But the San Rafael race was just like the field was attacking itself. And even when the break was established, the break was attacking itself. Like there wasn't really any rhythm and it was just hard kind of end to end. And if you were in that group, it meant that you were a really strong rider and probably pretty smart too, because you needed to be up there in the first place.
So were you in that break? Split. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I was in. I was.
That's a good way to put it.
Thanks for the compliment.
Yeah. Well, just kind of backtracking. I met, just a few years ago, you kind of took some time off to finish your MBA, and I was like, "Oh, good, giving some other people a break out here in the race." So, you're done with that, and you're back full time. Your wife has let you get back on the bike. Is that correct?
Okay. Yep. I've got the hall pass for this year, and I always joke that every year is my last year. So we'll see how this goes. For me, in addition to having the school, I was also hit and run by a truck, and I went through a lot of health stuff last year. And so this year's definitely it's me trying to prove that I can get back to where I was fitness wise and racing wise. And so far, so good.
Well, you had a good, 2015 Nationals? Because I was out there with you. And I think you were, sixth on the TT and the road race and the Omnium or something?
I was just off the podium twice.
Yeah. No, you did. That was a good road race because you were off in the break. Is that correct? Yeah. And I never did see you. So I don't know if that's impressive or not. But it was a good day for you, obviously. And then you got sixth in the time trial. So
yeah.
Were you up there in the overall then, like the Omnium? Is that correct?
No, I mean, I was thinking that might happen, but you really, to be up in the Omnium, you have to be the person that
wins one of those. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was, I mean, and then the crit, it wasn't working for me. That was Jan's race.
Yeah.
And so my job was pretty much just put myself on the ground and make sure that the field's together. So I was every chance I could to go to the front and just start pulling the brake back, because a brake formed like halfway through the crit, I think. And I was up there just trying to reel them in.
And how did that end for Jan then?
Not well.
Not well.
That was a tough one, because there's a right-hander and then basically a sprint and then another right-hander to the finish and the final sprint. And he was right on the wheel of the rider he needed to be on. And the guy in front of him, so two riders ahead of Jan, just washed out the turn or something. Yeah,
there was a nasty little wreck there.
And he didn't crash, but he pretty much slid his tubular down to nothing and blew his tire, and he's on the side of the road as we go by. So that was a bummer.
Yeah, that ended up with the NorCal win anyway, with Mike's Bikes. What's his name?
I think Dana won it.
Yeah, Dana. That's right. He won that. So good for him. Okay, so let's go back to your roster here. So who else do you have coming on board?
So also added Travis Lee, who's local.
Okay. Yeah, we know him.
Probably people familiar with Folsom Bike and Michael David know who Travis is. He's another super strong dude, maybe in a little bit different way. I think he's kind of lighter, and he's more of a Patterson pass kind of guy.
Yeah.
I see him as. But I was looking at his results, and he won I think he won Lodi as a 3.
Oh, interesting.
So,
I battled with him at the Auburn crit, and he did a little better than me, but he was going uphill pretty well that day. So, he's a littler stature type of guy.
Yeah. And he's really good about putting himself in the right spot at the right time.
Yeah.
Again, Snelling where Joe did well, Travis was right up there as well. Just always top 10, ended up with a really good result just by staying where he needed to be, stay out of trouble. And just putting yourself in position to pounce when needed. So he's definitely got some race smarts.
And then you have to have the legs.
Like yeah.
Being smart.
No,
that's
course.
Only half the game. But yeah, I think both those guys pretty smart. Joe, congratulations to Joe. He just had a son.
Oh, congratulations.
So we might not see Joe for the first part of the season.
Things change. I mean, this, you know, for the most part, this is not our, well, for the, all the part, this is not our job. Usually have to scale it back a little bit for the family, of course. So
yep.
Good for him. I can't imagine having another one at this stage of my life, but good for him.
You've got a pretty good litter, I think.
Yeah, right? They range from, 11 to 17, so they're more self-sufficient. Chris, it's your turn, though.
Yeah, we'll see.
You have cats.
They keep me plenty busy, those cats. Just trouble.
Who else? Anybody else new coming on? Besides, and then let's talk about the stalwarts that you do have coming, staying on the team, so...
Yeah, so those are the main additions. The brag sheet for our team, like a lot of other NorCal teams, we've got multinational champions. The names that everyone knows, so Jerome, Nadell, Chris Phipps, Tom Lyons, Gardy Jackson, Joe Foster. I think one of the things I like about this team is it's competitive in every race.
Yeah.
You've got bike racers and you got strong guys, and we will go out and make the race.
Yeah.
Jan, I think we have to maybe put him a little bit on the injured reserve. He just had a son, Marcel. So I don't know. There's something in the Thirsty Bear water where people are having kids.
Yeah.
We're not going to share bottles anymore, I think. but in seriousness, that's super awesome. And I think, you probably will see Jan in a couple crits this year, but it won't be at the same frequency of racing.
Yeah, and for those people that aren't aware of your team, they could just look for the guy with the unshaven legs. Is that right? For him?
I won't go there, but yeah. Yeah, I don't know why. Like, he could be so much faster.
Or they look faster. No, he's plenty fast, strong guy. You have what's interesting in the Masters racing, especially because you can spread yourself out through different category, the 35s, the 45s, and you can do multiple of those for me, our team, for a while there, I was the only one doing a Masters, or if I do a 45, I'm the only one. So instantly you're in a race where if another team has 3-4 riders, they could start to be dominant, especially you guys, where there's no breakdown from top to bottom. You send one guy up the road, well, someone's got to watch him, and then you send the next guy, well, someone's got to watch him. So every move becomes important, and I think with those Masters fields, it really gets accentuated with a team like yours out there.
Yeah, well, thank you. There are definitely some other heavy hitters. I'm not sure if.
Oh, of course.
I mean, Cobbles,
Pete's
Chris and... Cobbles, a one man wrecking crew.
That's true.
Yeah.
He's like 4 dudes. And then Pete's. I think they've added some pieces this year, but mostly the same and, similar to us, lots of even world champions. They have world champions. We don't have one of those, but guys that have broken the hour record. I mean, their palmeiras are really, really long and a super strong, smart team. So, yeah.
Well, you guys won the bat competition. Is that right? The bat? Yeah, in the NCNCA. And I think, you also won team competition at Nationals as well.
Yeah.
As well, right?
That was a highlight for us. I'm not sure if we did it this year, but I know the year that I did Nationals, we did it when it was in Utah. So that was.
Did you go last year? Cool. You didn't make the trek?
No.
No, don't shake your head.
I didn't have the legs. Oh. Like, it would have been just, yeah.
Well, it's moved up earlier in the year as well. So those of us that, you know, peak later on, I don't know if that's you. It makes it a little bit more difficult.
Is it still back east this year?
Yeah,
I believe so. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Are you planning on heading out there this year?
Maybe.
I think on the record. Your wife's not going to listen to this.
No. It's, you know, with the timing with Cascade moving, I think I want to do Cascade this year. It's
It got moved
up. That's a race that I can drive to as opposed to having to pack. And I would probably be packing two bikes.
Yeah.
And then having to deal with the heat there. And it's like,
Well, you have to fly. And so you'd pack two, I imagine, two bikes for Cascade as well.
Yeah. Well, that goes on the back of the car.
Yeah. That's much easier. Yeah. I think we're going to plan to try to do a Cascade since it got moved and they put the Masters back in.
Right.
So
with Cascade as a target, do you as a team kind of get together and talk about bigger races that you're wanting to focus on, whether it's Cascade or Valley of the Sun or Gila or anything of that nature?
Yeah, it's interesting. It happens, but it like randomly happens. Like I got an email yesterday from the team president that said, "Hey, get a head count for Chico." It's like, okay. Because we're starting to figure out what the housing looks like.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's how it'll happen. It won't be, you know, I have a team calendar out there for people to fill out. And like other team calendars that I've done with this team and other teams, it's like some people fill it out, some people don't. It's like, it's Masters racing. So it's not our job. And, you know, guys don't know where their fitness is going to be or they just, you know, they just don't know. So it'll be a game time. But yeah, we end up sorting it out.
Sure.
I think so I wasn't doing any like away stage races or anything last year, but the prior year that I did it, when I did Nationals and Cascade, we had like a house at Nationals. This huge house.
Damn.
And we had so much space, we had people from other teams there. And it just kind of organically happens and you kind of have to show up.
Right.
That's your job.
Yeah. We usually get a house for Cascade. We've
done that for Chico.
Right.
What's your take on, I'm sure you chimed in with the time trial bike or the Merckx bike at Chico.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
Obviously, I'm very biased because I'm a time trial guy. Like that's usually where my strength is. You look at how many crits are on the calendar and for most of those, it's going to favor sprinters.
Yeah, of course.
And then so in the world of cycling, you have sprinters, you have climbers, and you have time trialists. Well, so the sprinters have a lot of races. They have their pick of the litter, and the prizes are usually better, but I'm not one to hate.
Obviously not.
So, and then, you know, we've got a couple climbing races and climbing hill TTs on the calendar. There's a couple races that really suit climbers very well. And the number of time trials is shrinking.
Right.
You know, a lot of the like Dunlap comes to mind, like gone. The Folsom Cyclabration had a time trial on the South Canal. It was awesome because it was local. But then if you take a big name race like Chico, that's like, it's a mainstay now. I mean, that is the NorCal stage race. It used to be Madera and now Chico's the NorCal stage race. And you take away the time trial, I'm like, there's three other stages that people, if they're looking for a result, they can go get. And if you have fitness, you can fake your way through the TT.
Well, my thing was, unless you're going to change the time trial course itself, what's the point? I mean, you do a 10 to 11 miles, somewhere in that range. You don't think the gaps are still going to be similar on a Merckx style as they are going to be on a time trial bike? Of course they are.
Yep.
Like I had mentioned, Chris Phipps is still going to destroy me just like he would. It may be a different gap, but it's not going to be enough for me to overcome anything. So I don't have a problem with, I'm not much of a time trialer, but I kind of like the whole idea. Hey, you know, send him out there. They don't have a lot of opportunities, like you said, and let him have it. Unless you're going to change it to, I don't know, a mile uphill climb or something really strange. What's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was one thing that I thought it was a good comparison. This is the Facebook thread that was like 300 or 400.
Oh, it was crazy. Yeah.
It was like, it's a lot of opinions and I had my fair share in the group, but I was saying, you know, this is a guy that was a crosser. And I said, well, how about this? So if you think you should take away my time trial bike, then the next cross race you do, do it on your road bike. Have everybody do it on the road bike. Same thing.
Like Merck
you,
style.
You could totally do it on a road bike. Would it be fun? No. Would it suck a lot? Would there be crashes? Or like, you're just adding this element that is kind of unnecessary, I think. Just keep it a time trial.
And I don't know if Jeff Gallen, what his reason was for it. I mean, maybe just throwing it out there needed some clicks or something. So, and I don't mean ill will towards him. It was an interesting discussion. Obviously, 300 plus comments. It was is an interesting discussion. So, how does your team look for, how many do you think you're going to send to Chico, first of all? And then what does it look like for time trialing besides, you know, you? And are you guys going to age down at all for any of those races? Or are you going to all try to pick like the 45s? 55,
that's TBD. Right. So that's kind of in flux right now. I think Chris Phipps has done the 35s, I think, maybe every year that he's done Chico, despite being 45.
Yeah.
And then we've had a competitive 45 group. So I right now I don't know. It's looking like our 35 group will be smaller than it has been in past years. So we'll see. I mean, it's weird because you've got the team formerly known as Specialized, so Touchstone Racing.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got guys in both groups, and I'm not sure how that's going to go. Like, are they all going to race 35? They're all going to race 45. It's kind of a wild card right now with a race like Chico.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like you just talked about how that group of 45s, I would, when I first started doing masters, you know, when I had a chance to do the 45s, I'm like, oh, it's getting easier, right? You're getting older, but you look at that and I don't think that's the case. So I think the best bet there is to just consolidate in under whichever guy can time trial the best and try to do it under that one. I mean, that would seem like the best bet for me, but that's up to them, of course.
Yeah. You can still blow it in the gravel. I speak from personal experience.
No, of course, yeah. Do you like that race, the gravel course and everything?
Yeah, I like that section a lot. But stuff happens. I've had the last, I guess, two times I've done Chico, I flat it in the gravel.
No. Were you able to get back on with any of that?
The first time was, that's when the finish was on the hill.
Uh-huh.
And that was not a good day for me.
No.
The second time, it was awesome. I think I flatted right as we exited the gravel, and I had a teammate right there with a wheel, and then got the push off, and there was two of us pacing back to the group. So that worked out.
I've never flatted in the gravel, but I've always come off on the gravel, and just as I've connected, I've flatted, which is, I don't know if that's worse, but anyway, that's my sob story.
It's a really interesting section because there's so much going on there, you know, from the minute you enter there to then when it, you know, it kind of settles a little bit and then you hit that uphill and then that's just where things go a little bit bananas if people want to start really pushing the pace. And hopefully you're not that person that's trying to chase on, because at that point you're screwed.
Yeah, it's really, I don't do well in the gravel. So the last few years have actually been a challenge for me and been improving. So I've got that going for me. But
it's always good. I've always found the gravel changes a little year to year. Some years it's a little more hard packed. Some years it's a little softer. It seems like every year I've done it, it's been a situation of entering the gravel and maybe halfway through catching the group in front of you and then trying to deal with getting through that shrapnel of the group that's blown up before you and navigating through their support vehicles. And it's a lot of interesting little challenges. And I think it adds a really cool element of character to the race. And I think they've gone back to finishing just after the gravel again this year. Sure. So I think that's a better way to have the race finish. I like that versus the finish at the reservoir finish personally.
Yeah. I've gone back and forth on that one. I think it's cool to have, you know, almost like the highest point of the course be the finish if you finish after the gravel. But then if something happens in the gravel on that last lap, like it happened to me one year, you're done.
But on the plus side,
like there's no time to change it. If the field is going full gas.
Right.
Even if you had a flawless wheel change,
you're not catching back on. But at the same time, you may not lose a ton of time while if the finish is on the other side of the course and you get a flat and you can't chase back on, then you're losing tens of minutes at that point.
I lost enough to not really be in the running that day.
It's really interesting because I also think that the gravel can be such a big linchpin to the whole thing then, right? The tax can go on the gravel, whereas on the other side, it's a little bit more difficult to get away, especially if you're together and you're doing the run-in. It's kind of together unless, you know, you have a big wreck like we've had before. But otherwise, the gravel can kind of be used as a springboard for that finish because you have, 2 miles or so roughly afterwards. And that's how our old teammate Casey, who's now with Touchstone, that's how he won there as a three. Some of them just love the gravel. Either way, it's going to be interesting. So does that mean the start then we'll be parking over with where we have
Ganta?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I assume that's the only logical place for that to happen. There's really nowhere else to stage a big group of cars other than the town there.
Yeah. So what about other races for you guys? You'd mentioned Madeira. Do we even have that anymore? I think is it coming back on? There was another, there's San Dimas further down south for stage races. There is another stage race. There's it Modesto? Well,
there's Madeira. That's still sticking around. And that's okay. Got, if you're a P1 too, I think that's the one with the hill climb start. But that's on the calendar, I think, mid-February. And there's also the OTF Racing stage race. I don't know much about that, but I think it's kind of general Fresno area.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of the same roads, honestly, or similar, same locale as Madeira.
Okay.
I thought it was further south for some reason, but it's near, it's a mini Madeira, I think.
Okay.
But in mid-February.
Are you guys planning on doing that then as well?
That one's really interesting, but it's very early in the calendar to have a stage race. Like,
well, that's how Chico was the last several years, right? I mean, it
was the end of February, so it was the same. Like Mike Painter wanted to make it the same weekend as Mirko when Mirko went away. So Mirko was the last weekend of February, and then Chico was where it is now, and then Mirko went away, and then so he took that weekend for Chico, and that's where it's been ever since. Well, now I guess it's moving back, but
yeah. Do you guys go venture down to San Dimas at all, or are you pretty much staying up?
You know, I've always been interested in San Dimas. I don't know that we've had anyone from our team do it. I've never done it. It's surprising because I think it favors climbers.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of people that go up hills really well on our team, so I'm surprised that people don't do San Dimas, but I don't know why. I would say I wanted to bring up Madeira real quick. That's probably going to be a tune-up for Chico. So if anyone wants to brush up their stage race skills or get in a sort of maybe a better field than Madeira's seen for a while, I'm guessing Madeira will be bigger this year.
That'd be good. I think it's nice that we've got a couple either growing or stage races that are in the process of rejuvenating themselves.
Yeah, I'm showing that's March. Or is that February?
It must be February.
No, it's March. March 2. Oh. 3, 4, and 5, somewhere right around there. Depending on which category. I guess it's 3, 4. 2, 3, 4. Their calendar goes Monday to Sunday, so got a little mix up there. So yeah, that'll be interesting. And then we have when is it in Chico coming right up? The 16th, 17th, 18th of March as well. Copperopolis, that's probably a big one for you guys as well, right? I'm not a big fan of that race, but I can imagine that's a race you guys would probably take on pretty good.
Yeah, we usually copper. I think falls below the radar. I've done it exactly once, and it was a bad day for me. And it's always like over Easter. There's family stuff, and it means that it's one that I just typically don't do.
Have you looked at the calendar? Do you guys try to target specific things? I know you said you had a team calendar had gone out. Is there something that you guys are really looking forward to this year as a team to kind of take on besides you got, you know, the Chico? I don't know. There was that race last year that was kind of an omnium with Mount Hamilton. It seems like it might be something up your alley as well.
Yeah, you would think. I think the big targets for us will be Chico and then Nationals. And then other stuff in between. A couple of us did Baker City, which used to be was Elkhorn, right? It used to be, I think it was the Elkhorn stage race up in Baker City, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll have a decent team there this year.
Have you done that one before then?
Oh, I did it last year.
You did it last year. Okay.
Yeah. It's, it doesn't really suit me.
It's kind of climbing.
There's a lot of climbing. Right? There's a climbing, TT, like a short, you know, like 4 or 5 minute uphill TT. And then there's a standard pretty fast, like time trial. I think it was like 9 or 10 miles. But then the last stage is like a 50 minute climb. Ends with a 50 minute climb. It's a road race, and I think it's like 7 or 8 miles or something. Yeah. So you kind of, you have to like to climb. So all those, at Baker City,
all those climbers that were complaining about Chico, they can head up there.
There you go. Yeah.
Have their way with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up in, the Northwest, actually Walla Walla, Washington, which I was on the Oregon side, but Baker City was not that far from where we were. And, one of my first races was, I think it was down there. It was Le Grand and then Baker City, and there's some nasty climbing down there. So yeah.
It's the Baker City one was really appealing, I think, because we got an Airbnb and we rode to every stage. We rode our bikes to every stage.
So we could look out the
kitchen window of the place we were staying and see the start of the time trial course.
That's pretty nice. Yeah. What, and did you drive up?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a little bit longer. So I think Cascade's what, like 8 hours or something?
Right.
This was like closer to 10.
Okay, that's not terrible though.
Yeah, it's not horrible, but it's longer.
It's enough,
and you're staring at a lot of Nevada, Idaho countryside.
I didn't see your name on San Bruno, so you're probably debuting at
Big debut,
Cal Aggie, right?
Yep, Cal Aggie. We're going to try and get some decent numbers out for Cal Aggie. We got some with the new guys. I think we want to get out there and roll. So yeah. But Cal Aggie's fairly simple.
Of course.
Everyone's varying levels of fitness, and then there's a sprint at the end, and
you see if you can avoid a wreck. And you know what's also nice though about that is like we can you and I at least can line up for at least 3 races that day. And I don't know if you will, but that's a good way to get some training in.
Yeah.
See, so now you guys. Always easy to spot in the Peloton, distinctive kits for the past several years. Any changes on that front?
Yeah. We went with the black and the gray, which I think is very stealthy. That means, you know, when I'm sprinting at the end, you don't even see me until I come by you. This year, it's light blue top. So it's the same blue that was in the, we had kind of a pinstriping on the shorts. So now it's like, it's almost like Team Sky, where you've got light blue, some black lettering, and then some white pinstriping. So, and that was exactly like I was kind of joking, is I would have no idea who's up the road. You can't tell when there's like 4 black jerseys up the road if you have a teammate up there. And so this will make it easier to spot everyone. And then I think there's a couple teams that are mixing it up a little bit that we'll be able to pick people out and understand, you know, if we need to be worried or not up the road.
Right. Yeah, there were definitely times where there'd be a group up the road and I'd kind of glance around and be like, oh, okay, Kurt's up there. Like, oh, that's not Kurt. There's so many kits that just kind of blend together in that Masters field.
Some guy in a black Castelli kit.
Right. And a white helmet.
And you see that with trends. You know, when we first started, we had these yellow helmets and shoes and it was easy to pick out. And then, you know, things change and it's kind of black and then people are going that. And now everyone, I don't know, it changes up. I'm not necessarily a big fan of some big bright colors, but you need that in bike, like EF Education First. I don't like their kit at all, but yet if you're on that team, you definitely know how to pick your team out. And I think that might be a very important part of the bike race aspect, which is a good thing. Now, I just was looking here at your team kit. It looks good. And I saw Chris Phipps. Someone said that they thought he went down this last week on a ride. Is everything good? You guys...
Yeah, so there's a ride from San Francisco to Santa Barbara every year for the 3-day weekend that we just had, and they rode along Highway 1, and I guess he was just riding along in the group. He put a video on Facebook, and you couldn't even see what he hit until he was over the front of the bike. He got, I think, like 6 stitches in his chin and like 3 in his lip or something. So stitches, I mean, all things considered, if you're going to crash and have to go to the ER, stitches are, I think, much better than broken bones. But, you know, hopefully he's able to heal up quick and maybe get some anti-inflammatories or maybe a couple beers. As many as his, he had a thing, I don't know if you saw it, but he said he was going to, it was like one beer for every 1,000 feet he climbed or something this year. So,
damn.
So you might have to break that rule. You know, I don't think anyone would mind, and they wouldn't hold it against him, but, I hope he heals up quick.
I imagine he climbs a lot. Is he an alcoholic? Is that what you're... No, yeah. That could be a lot of beer. Well, all our best for him. I mean, obviously we want him to be doing well. That's a little crazy though.
Yeah. It's easy to have a mishap in that situation. Highway 1's probably not the cleanest shoulder to ride on, unfortunately.
What about your wreck? You got hit by a car, is that correct? Did anything ever come about? Did they find the guy? You're all good, right?
Recovered, well, yeah, or? So they didn't find the person, and it just, because of the nature of where it happened, they won't. Like, there was, even when I filed the report with the police, they said, there's no cameras anywhere, and so that was that. And then it was a long road to recovery. It was 3 surgeries. Because I had my shoulder got infected, and then it was a lot of time off the bike and some soul searching and a lot of TV. Saw a lot of Netflix and Amazon. And so if you need any recommendations for what to watch while you're sitting on the couch for 12 hours at a time.
You've got it nailed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's got to be tough, especially, you know, as we get a little older. I don't know if the recovery was any worse because, you know, obviously you're fit. So I think some of that helps. But like you said, starting to think, I think I even just... descending and doing a few things just in training, like I'm like, that's not pushing the limit. Now, once I get in a race, I'll probably will because I'm stupid like that. But you know, sometimes you're like, what's the point? I mean, I'm out here riding. So
yeah,
and you got hit by a car. I mean, what do you, it's not like you were, I imagine you weren't doing anything nefarious.
Yeah, it was, they weren't there and then they were. And then I was downside tea kettle in the air flipping around. So there wasn't a lot of time to really think about, you know, what could have happened differently or whatever. It just happened. But yeah, I think the thing that really, it actually helped me, like my fitness helped me recover really well. When I was going through physical therapy, my physical therapist said it was a pretty remarkable recovery from the amount of time that I had off. And then the mobility, I was able to get back and strength and all that stuff.
Did your wife give you any grief? Not, and I mean that like, you know, sincere about, hey, maybe it's time. Cause that is the one thing. It's one thing to be out there racing and, you know, you get in a wreck, things happen. It's a controlled environment. But I mean, when you're out there and the car just hits you, that's a little different.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all know you tell the line on family capital, when you spend long miles out, you know, riding or training or what have you, or racing, you know, you're away for a weekend, you know, playing pretend, having fun with your friends. This instance, it wasn't, for me, the bike was a road to recovery. So, it was kind of hard to get in the way of that as far as, you know, I really needed to sort things out in my head, and also with my fitness. And it was kind of like the season is a way to prove to myself that I could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how do you expect your 2018 to go? How are you on for form and your expectations and goals?
Yeah, it's good. My training's going well. The weather's not cooperating.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's a difficult comparison because the several years where I just had, you know, knock it out of the park fitness, they were consecutive. So when I would take a week off at the end of every season, and then I would start up and it would just be nothing structured. I would just get time on the bike and I would explore and kind of like, you know, mentally recharge, but I was still riding.
Yeah. Yeah.
So probably like 50 or 51 weeks a year I was riding. So you kind of, there's never that, you know, letdown where I wasn't really riding for several months at a time when I was laid up. So that baseline is so much lower.
Did you have any trouble with kind of the guilt of I'm not riding now, or I mean, or were you even on your bike? Were you doing, you know, like stationary stuff, or you know, you take time off and then you got that antsiness to you, or were you able to just kind of put it away and say, you know, not now?
Yeah, I think you're kind of alluding to like fitness anxiety, like the people that feel like they always need to be working out or something. And early on I came to the realization that it just, this was time when I wasn't going to be doing that. And that there was no way I could hang on to any fitness, because really what I needed to do was just get well. And I mean, I was on a, I don't know if you know what a PICC line is, but it's like a permanent IV in your arm. And I would get medication once a day. I mean, and I'd be like knocked out sometimes where I'm just like, I'm just going to sit here and just stare at the TV. So there wasn't really the opportunity to like, oh, I'm all fired up, I'm going to get on my trainer now and, you know, be hardcore. I was on Zwift and I did do trainer time, but it wasn't like any hard intensity. It was just
more mental than at that point, right? Like, hey, I'm doing something.
Yeah.
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 Or maybe not.
It seems to help. I mean, I had an injury a couple of years ago. It wasn't nearly as bad, but I was off the bike for a month and a half, and just being able to kind of be active and spin the pedals and see some type of progress, or whether it's just I put in 5 more minutes or 10 more minutes on the bike today than I did yesterday, I think that helps build up some of that foundational mental fitness.
Once again, we are hearing of a situation that could have ended poorly and had grave consequences for those left behind. It then should be no surprise that I am reminding everyone to check out our sponsor, HealthIQ, at healthiq.com/BTW. As you just heard, a significant life event can come on you pretty quickly and within a few days change the course of direction you had for your family in a drastic way. It only takes a short amount of time to check life insurance rates and submit your Strava rides or runs or race results to prove you're a healthy person and deserving of better rates. It's like saving money for being a good driver. HealthIQ gets you lower rates on life insurance with your health-conscious lifestyle. Between Two Wheels is sponsored by HealthIQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people get special life insurance rates. Go to healthiq.com/BTW to support the show and learn more.
The team's looking good. We're excited for them for this year. I mean, we hope to beat them personally, but I always enjoy racing with you guys. A lot of good guys out there for the most part in general. I mean, I don't have any problems with your team. I'm just saying there's a guy or two out there that I don't like. I couldn't even name him, but not on your team, which is always a good thing. But you were just at Cross Nats, right? Give us a little breakdown of what you thought. Do you do any cross racing yourself, first of all?
So I've raced cross and enough to know that I'm not very good at it. It doesn't play to somebody that's kind of a big slow twitch muscle.
Yeah.
It's more similar to mountain biking, where you need a lot of poppy accelerations and just kind of stay at the limit and then go above and below and surge a lot. But so yes, I have raced cross. I understand that from my mountain biking background, and then from, you know, I did the SAC series for a couple years.
Mm-hmm. When was the last time you raced
cross? Last time I rode my cross bike was maybe a couple weeks ago, but the last time I raced cross was, I don't know, maybe like 5 years ago. It makes the calendar too big.
Yeah.
Like, honey, I'm going to go to a bike race almost every other week and out of the year is just not a winning strategy for me.
No, of course not.
So.
And so how was Nationals then, just as a spectator? Because we were able to see the live stream, and it was for the men's race, at least I watched it. And it was a really good race. I will say I called the winner the day before.
You did.
It was the only guy I knew his name. So.
Yeah, so I grew up and went to college in Reno.
Oh, okay.
So for me, it was really cool to see a big time event come to my hometown. And they picked a great venue. Rancho San Rafael, the park they had in it, is just this big, long slope, high desert. So you could be at the top of the course and see the bottom of the course. So very wide open. And, you know, cross has got all these winding tracks and mm-hmm. stuff. So you can pack a lot of miles into kind of a shorter area. But yeah, it was really neat. They did a great job. They, you know, all the features they had in there. I mean, you saw the race online, you know, between the sand pit and the Belden Stairs and then the hill at the very end, and kind of making that just this kind of crazy technical thing. Like the less skilled riders I was on the hill watching them come down that thing were just like not having fun.
I imagine there were some crashes. I didn't see the front guys go down at all. It just does look like it was just attrition. No flats really to break that up either.
Well, there was some flats. So
from the lead four or five guys though?
No, no. But I was near the pit and I saw somebody pit a flat and then some guy had a mechanical at the beginning of the pro race. I don't know if you could barely catch it on the stream. You can see this field motoring off and this guy's off to the right hand side or left hand side, and his day is done. I don't know if somebody ran into his bike and he was just
playing all year.
His chain suck and it was like have a nice nationals, bye. So but it was a really cool event. Seemed like a lot of people there. It was difficult to really meter or figure out how many people were actually there because you could run or walk to different parts of the course as the race was going on. So if I wanted to go see, pros ride the Belgian stairs, I go do that, or see them rip through the sand pit and just ride it like it wasn't even there. Or, stand on the side of the hill, on the big hill, and watch them come run up or descend or whatever. I was right there in the basically where if anyone's gonna crash, we were sitting right off that turn. And these two people in front of me, this guy and his girlfriend, and she said, "I'm not really sure this is the safest place to be." And I said, "You guys are good. Just stay right there."
Yeah, no bikes came flying at him then or anything.
No, bodies there wasn't any melees. But that was the loudest section of the course. There was a lot of people there that were just like, anytime somebody would clean something or have a little bobble or something, there'd be a lot of cheering or heckling or whatever. It was cool.
Is that kind of rooted off camber turn? Is that what you're talking about?
This is, so there's the run up and then you kind of skirt the ridge.
Yeah.
And then you come almost vertical straight down to a left-hander and then a right-hander. Or wait, a right then a left, sorry.
Yeah, okay.
I was able to.
Like a really challenging section of a race course.
You need nationals to be a big event like that, and it's pretty cool to get the crowds out there. And I think Cross really does a good job of that. Obviously, it's the way it's able to pack it in to be like a crit. I was able to watch I think it was 97 or 98 Cross Nationals, and when they were in Denver, and same thing. It was snow on the ground, but there's a big crowd out there on one of the top of the hills, off camber thing. People sliding and everything, and That's good. I mean, I wish all of our events were packed like that. But you can't always do that in a warehouse type of crit course either. So
yeah, that definitely doesn't bring the crowds.
No, it doesn't. Well, I appreciate you coming in today. Do you have any comments on the world of cycling as of right now? I know the big news with Chris Froome, and I don't know if you heard about his liver and kidney and vanishing twin, and I don't know where else he's got going on.
He's got a vanishing twin in his kidney, right?
Yeah, well, that's
just one day only, though.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird world of cycling right now. I mean, to me, that his desperation of trying to come up with a new, and it may be legit, but it seems like desperation now.
Yeah, that one's a tricky one. I think I honestly believe him when he says he did nothing wrong. But I was also thinking it's oddly similar to the Contador case.
Yeah.
Where you think if somebody was maybe taking on some blood that they maybe banked during a training regimen when maybe they were taking something so that they could get thinner and faster, that was maybe still in their system, and then they take on some blood, then that might explain why those limits are a little bit high.
Yeah, I don't know how
it's outside of normal. And the crappy thing for him is I think, I honestly believe he did nothing wrong. Like, he did nothing outside of what he would have normally done. I think he's a very regimented person. It's a very regimented team. Like, they don't just mess stuff up. There's like, whoopsie, I put the decimal in the wrong spot. No, I don't think that happens on Sky, and I don't think that happens with Chris Froome. I think he did everything according to a protocol,
I actually think that argument holds water because this team that is so specific about everything, and I don't know what he was doing. That's the part of the problem. But this team that pays attention to all these little details, he's had to put the salbutamol on his testing sheet every day when he goes in there. So it's not like you're, sneaking something. So he knows he's got this, and he's taking these. So who knows? I mean, there's always the problem is now you're trying to say, oh, my kidney and my liver are reacting in a weird way. And, you know, that may be legit. That's the problem now. It may be legit, but it looks so desperate. And but your point is very well taken, because you can't just say it's a fly by night, situation team either. So I don't know, Chris, you got to take on you were looking at the medical reports today, right?
A little bit. What I could find, it's not all that readily available, but I agree. I think it just seems a little desperate, and it seems like an unusual thing that'd be really difficult to prove one way or the other. And I think if you look at it from a court of public opinion perspective, if he's found innocent, he's still lost. It'll just look terrible for the sport. And if he's found guilty, it'll look terrible for the sport. So it's an unfortunate thing, and it's going to get blown up one way or the other. And Team Sky will face the brunt of it, and cycling will have another sizable blemish.
Well, that's the one thing that I still, there's a lot of discussion that I see that says this is a horrible thing. We've done this before. Like, this is not our first rodeo. Like, right. So it sucks for Chris Froome, but it does it really suck for cycling? Is somebody going to see the Chris Froome thing and go, wow, people in cycling are doing drugs to win races? That's earth shattering. No, it's like we've done this before. The Chris Froome, in my opinion, thing will play out one way or another. The Contador thing played out. He still raced. And I think he probably gained a lot of fans post clenbuterol than he did.
And plasticizer. Don't forget there was plasticizer in the system. That was the key thing people don't remember, which is a big deal.
So. I drink my Coke out of a plastic bottle, not a can. So don't hold it against me. There might be some plasticizers in my blood.
Not to the extent that they were. You go back and review that one. Anyway, but you know, you're right. The Contador had, you know, he wasn't booed, you know, at the top of the mountain. And so who knows?
Yeah, it's I don't know. I would hope I would like to see cycling handle this stuff in-house. Maybe Chris Froome decides to retire. Maybe it's leave of absence.
In-house.
You know what I'm saying?
Like the mob.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's this black eye. It chases away sponsors.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure there's people that are towing the line between, you know, to the letter of the law and to the spirit of the law.
I am not naive about, you know, the situations anymore. And I say anymore because I was, you know, you always wanted to believe everything back in the day. I mean, it was actually this. Well, Lance is innocent. Well, that guy's guilty, though. You know, he's a French guy, of course, you know. But I don't feel like I'm that spot anymore. But in the same respect, it's good to see cyclists, you know, his coworkers, so to speak, come out and be upset. Because I don't know that you had that back in the Lance day. You know, there was the silencing, and now you have on all these young guys that they'll post anything on Twitter of, you know, like the hate comes out immediately from his own, you know, coworkers, so to speak, which I think is a positive, because that, to some extent, because I think they're actually feeling like, you know, Alexi Vermeulen, who's not getting a contract at 23, you know, he's like, I don't know that him specifically is saying anything. I'm just thinking that he's a guy in the news. And, you know, he's like, I want a contract, you know, someone dirty up above is doing something, you know, screw him. So maybe it's a good attitude that the kids are taking nowadays.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
All right. Once again, appreciate it. We'll be seeing you out on the road and in the races. By the way, enjoyed having you come out on some of the Coffee Republic rides. You were joining up. I don't know if that was your first full one. Second. Okay. Well, the other one, you missed us.
But I think before that you had a mechanical as well that kind of hampered your day, and you have like a stem bolt issue.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Something.
That was a good sized group out there last week, though. I don't know. Bad omen. Anyway, thanks again.
The Coffee Republic ride disagrees with me, apparently.
Why? Wait. Let's
no,
back
totally
up there.
Joking. No, it's just Chris is right. Like the first time I came out, there was like I snapped a stem bolt. And,
yeah, well.
And then I was riding home alone. And the second time I was late. And I just watch you guys from like 400 to 800 meters out, just watch you ride away, and I can't get you. And
well, last week you put the hurt on people, so that was good.
At the very end.
Well, good job.
The rest of it was sitting in.
No, you didn't sit in on the climb. Well, I don't know. I got dropped, so
I sat in on the climb.
There was a lot of people out there. It was a good show. I was hurting. I was a little under the weather, I want to say. But yeah, keep coming out. We enjoy having you out there. So not like it's our show to enjoy, but thanks. And thanks for coming in today. I appreciate it. Yeah. And good luck to your team this year. Chris, thank you for coming in too.
Always happy to be here.
Right, thanks.